kept that in my head the whole time I was gone because I was like, I can't quit. Like, I can't go back home because there's people expecting me to quit. So that was kind of like my driving force was like, I have to do this. I can't give up.
My name's Johnny Reinhardt, and I've lived in Southwest Michigan most of my life. It's such a wonderful community full of so many great things, but the best part is the people, families, history, and especially the stories that make it great. And with every story, you have to start somewhere. This is Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan. Welcome to episode 2 of Start From the Beginning. Today, I'm talking to Adele Garcia, and she's an amazing person in our community. But what's funny is before we started, we were emailing back and forth and she said, yeah, I'd love to be on the podcast, but I don't think my story is very interesting. Well, I disagree completely. And I think you will too. We talk about her time in the Army. She's a Purple Heart recipient and she's working on a book. There's a lot of stuff that she's got going on and there's more to her story. So let's get right to it. Adele, I am so happy that you said yes to join me on this show. And, you know, when we were kind of talking and planning this whole thing out, you said, I don't know how interesting my story is, but I'll tell it. I'll share it. But I'm excited because I find you to be very interesting. And that's what I love about doing this show is that it gives me an opportunity not only to learn more about the people I talk to in our community, but also tell other people about the great people that are here in our area and the great stories they have to tell. So I think your story is interesting and it's still being written, I would say.
Yeah. I think so.
But first off, I want to ask you, you live in Allegan, but I just found out you're not originally from Southwest Michigan, but you would call Michigan home now as opposed to where you were before, right?
are we not saying where I was from before?
Well, we'll say Ohio. You're from Ohio.
I'm okay. Yeah.
It's one of our neighbors from the South that we don't like to talk to too much. It's like those relatives that you know you're there, you live close by, but you don't always want to visit them. Right. But no, nothing against Ohio. But you've lived in Allegan, but I will say you do have a very interesting story. And we crossed paths a few years back and you were doing, and it was actually the title of the event. It was Adele's Alive Day Run. And that has to do with your time in the military. But let's start from the beginning, as the show is called. You're originally from Ohio. What was it like growing up in Ohio?
You know, it was interesting. And I can say that now looking back on it. I grew up in Youngstown, which is kind of in the steel mill area by Pittsburgh. And, you know, it was growing up, it was kind of a poor economic development area. The steel mills had closed. So, you know, a lot of bigger manufacturers had moved out of the city. And, it was very urban and very, you know, I ran with some tough crowds in high school. And, you know, because of that, you know, I just have a very diverse background, I like to say, and I appreciate just a lot of different cultures and people because of that. So I think I was really lucky to be exposed to a lot, growing up in a town like that, in a city like that. So, I was ready to get out when I turned 17. So.
Yeah, you certainly run into some challenges if you have, you know, different things like that. High school is such a interesting time for anybody. But what was Adele like in high school? Did you play sports or were you a good kid or a bad kid?
I was a mixture. I was definitely a good kid. I got good grades. You know, I followed the rules, so to speak. But I did definitely kind of have a bad streak and, you know, kind of had some groups of friends that, you know, I'd go out and do fun things with, which I definitely wouldn't want my kids to probably do. But I got good grades. I played sports. I ran track, played volleyball, was in all the clubs. So I kind of was like that, just always doing everything kind of person. I've always been like that, I guess.
Yeah. And did you get in trouble a lot or just you know, have a couple of those moments?
Yeah, I had a couple close calls, you know, a couple house parties where we're like sneaking out the back door as the police are coming in the front door, kind of close calls. But never got arrested, never, you know, got suspended or anything like that. I have three older siblings, so I feel like I learned from all their mistakes. And good things and bad things. I learned it all from them. So
are you the youngest in the family then?
Yep. I'm the baby.
See, I am too. And I think that is the good and the bad part about the youngest kid is that the youngest kid learns from the mistakes from the parents or from the parents and really the older siblings. But also it's bad because you learn all that stuff and you learn what not to do. But then you also know how to not get caught doing some of those things. So it can be a good and a bad thing and turn out bad for you.
Yep.
So did the house, did you ever have a house party at your house?
Oh, yeah, I did. My parents, they left a 16-year-old home alone for a whole week and went to New Mexico on vacation.
What were they thinking?
I was the youngest. I don't know. They were like done. They were over it.
You'll be fine. Yeah. You can take care of yourself.
She could drive herself to school. She's got plenty of food. And so, yep, we had a house party and the police were called because at the time, that's when cell phones were just coming out and they were like really big and bulky. And a friend of mine left and was walking down the street holding his big bulky cell phone and somebody thought he had a gun. And so the police were called and it was one of those escorting people out the back as I was holding down the fort in the front. So, my parents never found out.
Your parents never found out.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, if they knew, they never said anything to me.
So if they watch this or if they listen to this podcast, they're going to say, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You did that on our trip to New Mexico.
There you go. You get it.
Well, so tell me about this. So, you know, you said, you know, you ran with all kinds of different crowds of people, sports and, you know, parties and things like that. And then what made you make the decision to join the military? Because you spent some time in the Army, which, by the way, thank you for your service for sure. But tell me this. Were your siblings in the military? Did you come from a military family? What made you say, all right, I'm joining the Army?
So my dad was Army and my grandfather and a couple uncles. I never had a thought to join the Army until my senior year. I knew I wanted to go to college, but I knew I didn't have a lot of money for college. So I knew it was going to be like a lot of student loan debt. And I was kind of just struggling with how I was going to pay. And my sister, my older sister at the time, was a manager for a gas station. And this recruiter used to come in every morning to get his coffee. This Army recruiter. And he was trying to convince my sister, who was in her 20s at the time, that she should join the Army. And she was like, I'm too old for that. Like, I'm too set in my ways. But I have a little sister that would be perfect. And so so I kind of blame it on my sister that it's really her fault that I joined. But, you know, I talked to the recruiter and it made sense. Like I was, you know, he helped me kind of see, like, I kind of knew what I wanted to do with my life, but then it was like, did I really, and didn't have any money. So this just really kind of opened those doors of what I, you know, needed at the time.
Yeah. Military certainly does that. I mean, you have that, the opportunities are there, the different skills that you learn, different. Yeah. It's a good place for when you don't know exactly what you want to do, but you know, you want to get a good education and learn new things. It's a good route to go. I have a nephew that is in the Air Force right now. He's going through training. And so he's doing the whole, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I have brothers that are in the military. So he was like, well, maybe this is the right path. Mm-hmm. So you joined right out of high school, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what was that like?
That was a huge culture shock. So that was my first airplane flight, was to go to basic training by myself at the age of 17.
Wow.
And go ahead.
Yeah, because you didn't get to go to New Mexico with your parents.
Yeah, They left me behind.
First flight, you know, you're getting out of Youngstown, Ohio. You're joining the military. Basic training was where?
Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Wow. So not a too long of a flight. So your first flight wasn't too bad. But what was that experience of just flying on the plane for the first time?
I remember I was really nervous. And the gentleman, I don't remember his name, but the guy that was sitting next to me, he had the window seat. And I think he could tell that I was like really nervous.
Yeah.
He's like, have you ever flown before? And he was asking me all these questions. And so, you know, back, this was like 98. This is back when it was still normal to talk to random people next to you on planes. It wasn't like so weird. And he ended up switching seats with me so I could have the window seat, because he said, like, you'll never get this experience again. He's like, so you should get the window seat. So I don't know who he was or where he ever went, but that was kind of a cool thing to remember about that.
Absolutely. And so you get into basic training, and was that something, because that's another thing that it's a struggle, because some people, they do really well going through the basic training, but sometimes it can be really tough for them, you know, missing their family, but just it's a shock to them. But what was it like going through that? Did you learn new things just from that time in basic training?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was definitely a shock. Prior to leaving, my recruiter worked with me on like the exercises and just like what to expect. But until you're in the moment and you have the drill sergeant yelling at you in your face, it's hard to really prepare for it. And I mean, I learned, you know, I can't talk about it. I mean, I don't know how it is now, because I know a lot has changed with the military. Sure. But back then, you know, they were really good at really just stripping you down to the bare emotions and then building you back up, you know? And there were a lot of people that couldn't manage it, you know, and it was hard. There were nights where I just lay there in the bunk, like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? But before I had left, I had a family member tell me that it was okay to quit and that nobody would judge me if I came home early. And like, so I kept that in my head the whole time I was gone, because I was like, I can't quit. Like, I can't go back home, because there's people expecting me to quit. So that was kind of like my driving force, was like, I have to do this. I can't give up.
Yeah, that is definitely something. Yeah, you want to prove them wrong.
Yeah.
I wonder, because I know there's some people that, you know, it's that sort of roller coaster ride of just going through the basic training, or even their first couple of years in the military of, I don't think this is the right thing for me. I don't want to do this. You know, once my term is done, I'm out of here. I'm not doing this anymore. But you knew that, you know, like you said, there was people that were kind of expecting, you know, it's okay if you want to give up, but you didn't. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I learned pretty early on that you almost always have to be one step ahead of your drill sergeant. So like we didn't have alarm clocks, but like, I kind of learned when they would come in and wake us up. And so I was able to train my body to wake up 10 minutes before the drill sergeants would come in. And I'd already have my bed made, my battle buddy stuff laid out for them, because they were kind of a slacker. And, you know, I would just like be like one step ahead. And I didn't do it to stand out. I did it so that like I could ensure that my bunk mates, like, you know, that we were always like towing the line when we had to, because I didn't want us to ever be the last people at the line.
Yeah.
So, that I learned that early on, just always be one step ahead.
And that waking up early has stuck with you, because I think I've seen you waking up at like 4 o'clock or something like that in the morning. and you know, you're many years out of the military, but it still sticks with you. Now you have two daughters. Do you teach them some of the stuff that you learned, and or do you still kind of follow that sort of military mindset of just the structure involved in that when you're raising your kids?
A little bit. I feel like I've relaxed a lot over the years. Probably my oldest probably got the brunt of that. You know, we've like in the military, you know, you always cleaned all of your equipment, your room and all that on the weekend. Like that's like, you know, your prep for the week. And that's something that has stayed with me all these years. And so like my oldest is 20 now, and like, you know, she's the same way. Like, you know, you clean on Saturdays, you do this on Sundays. Yeah. And she definitely kind of picked that up from me. My youngest is definitely more, you know, she just, you know, she's a teenager. So she's kind of trying to find her own way and not always follow mom's path. But, you know, they definitely, I think, have gotten their work ethic from me for sure. And their dad.
That's great. That's great. So you get out of basic training, and where do you go from there?
So then I went to Fort Lee, Virginia for what's called advanced individual training, AIT. And that's where you learn like your specific job type.
Okay. And what was your specific job?
I was a, at the time it was called 77 Foxtrot, which is a petroleum supply specialist. So basically a fuel handler. So I can fill up any type of vehicle on ground, in the air. I can set up a gas station in the middle of nowhere if I have the equipment. Wow. Really, wow. Really practical, you know, like, you know, skills that really help me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You pump gas like an expert. So then, so you did that, you learned all that stuff. And then you served overseas as well, right?
Yeah. Well, first I went to Fort Lewis, Washington. So I was stationed. So I went from East Coast to West Coast. And that's where I actually met my husband. He's also in the Army, and we both served out there in Washington for a couple years, and we actually got out of the Army. When our contracts were up, we finished our contracts and moved back to Michigan. And I, not that I didn't love Michigan, but you know, it's like, I wasn't from Michigan. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any of my own family here.
Plus you had the Ohio Michigan thing.
You know, there's that. But, so I actually, as soon as we moved back, I immediately joined the National Guard. I was like, I miss it. And I kind of felt like I needed, my own space where like I still had like a family, you know, even though I have my husband's family and that's great, but you know, I needed my own thing to do in Michigan. So, and that was in 2001, right when 9/11 happened. So,
And you joined the National Guard before 9/11.
Yeah, right? It was, actually my paperwork for the National Guard was signed on 9/11 of 2001. Wow. Yeah. And so I knew when that happened, you know, I already had a feeling something was going to go down, you know, before they, you know, everything was announced and all that. So, ended up going to Iraq in 2004. So a couple years later, but in the National Guard, not active duty. So.
Right. I was going to say, that's not something that you expected when you mm-hmm. signed that, to be part of the National Guard. You just thought, okay, well, it's something military. It's something for me to do, something I know. So that totally changed things, but I want to get to that in a second. But you met your husband, like you said, in Washington. Was he doing the same job as you, or did you just, you knew him from the base?
No, we were in the same unit and we were in different platoons, so different groups, but we did the same job. And he actually, like, I think I knew him before he knew me. And then he left for Honduras for 6 months. And then when he got back is when we kind of got introduced through a mutual friend. And
yeah,
that was it.
That's awesome. The rest is history on that. Wow.
Yeah, the rest is history.
So you joined the National Guard and then you said 9/11 happened. And then that totally kind of changed what you were doing and what you were even planning to do. Mm-hmm. You know, when, did you have a choice when they said, hey, we're going to send you to Iraq? Did you have a choice to say, no, I don't want to do that? Or was it pretty much your plans had been made?
So, leading up to the call in 2003, we knew that at that point, National Guard units were already being sent over. So like our unit, we kind of knew it was a matter of time before our number was called. Mm-hmm. And, we actually got notification that a unit from the east side of the state in Howell was being activated, but they didn't have enough bodies. And so they were recruiting more people from the other, from all over Michigan to go with the Howell unit. And one of my good friends that was in the National Guard with me, she called me and she's like, hey, she's like, a whole bunch of us are going to go. We're just going to do it. We'd rather just go with a Michigan unit versus getting pulled into another state's unit, something like that. So, you know, I thought about it maybe for a couple minutes and I was like, okay, well, if all of my closest friends that I serve with currently are going to step up and do this, like I have to do it too, because I don't want to be left behind and go with people I don't know. So in essence, I did kind of volunteer to go.
Yeah. And that's what I'm kind of sensing is that that's sort of your mantra is that, you know, you're going to do it and you're going to either prove people wrong or, you know, just you sound like a very confident person that's like, I'm making this happen, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. So you, I actually just learned this the other day, that you have a Purple Heart.
I do.
And the first time we met was during your Alive Day run that you were doing. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, how many miles did you end up running? Because you were, it was a long period of time that you were gone.
Yeah. Yep. I ran for 12 hours and it was somewhere around 46 miles, give or take. I started in Berrien Springs, ran to Stevensville, then ran to St. Joe, then to Benton Harbor, then back to Berrien Springs, and then like past Berrien Springs, like into actual like the town of Berrien Springs.
Yeah.
And yep. then back to the op center. So it was like a big, huge loop.
Yeah. And I remember when you arrived, I was tired just from seeing you after you and the other, and because you had some coworkers with and some really other friends that were pumping you up, but they didn't run the whole time. They were, you know, catching you for 4 or 5 miles at a time, but you were going. But I think the biggest surprise to me was the fact that you didn't just fall down at the end. I mean, you were like, hey, you want to talk? Let's talk about some stuff. And we did like a full interview and you were, I mean, a little out of breath and you looked tired, but not as much as I would think of somebody that ran that amount of distance. So was there a significance to the amount of miles that you were running?
Well, not the miles itself. Uh-huh. So our goal was to raise $13,000. And so originally I was like, oh, I'll run for 13 hours, but then logistically, like 12 hours just made more sense, like for the workday and stuff, because we wanted to kind of end it at 5 p.m. So the goal was to raise $13,000 because at the time it had been 13 years since I was injured in Iraq. And so that day, May 25th, is my alive day. So like that's the day that like I always just kind of like take a moment to remember that I could have died, but I didn't. So let's celebrate.
Yeah. And were you at that moment when you were injured that you weren't sure if you were going to, if that was going to be the end of your life or what?
Yeah. I mean, the day that it happened in Iraq, you know, we got blown up and I was fortunate that my injuries weren't serious.
Yeah.
But at the moment when like it was actually happening, you don't, like you lose all like sense of reality because like explosions are very much like just disorienting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my buddy that was in the truck with me, he lost his eye, which he's still alive and we still talk all the time. But at that, like that day, like it just, you know, between, the explosion and driving through the explosion and getting him out of the truck and just all of that, it's like, you know, it didn't sink until later that like, wow, this could have really been a lot worse because we were driving up onto a bridge when we got blown up. So like and everybody else that was in the convoy that day, that was driving, that was behind us, they literally could not comprehend how we kept the truck on the bridge. Like I was driving on a curve when I lost my sight and like vision, everything. And I kept going and was able to pull over on the bridge. And, I didn't like, you know, you always just like, there's a lot of bad things that could have happened that didn't. So I try to be grateful for that.
Yeah. And you were the one driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And how many people did you have in the truck with you?
It was just me and my battle buddy. So. Okay. We have a semi truck, so it's just, you know, like a 2-seater.
Yeah. And that's another thing about you that I've learned is that you're not just looking out for yourself. You're looking out for everyone that's around you. I mean, like in that moment you have that, you know, so disorienting, but you first thing you did was, okay, all right, I'm okay. I'm going to see how my buddy's doing and make sure he's okay. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just, an amazing story and wonderful that you're still around and be able to have this conversation with you. And it's just an amazing story. So, all right, now you're out of the military. Let's fast forward to that. It's what, 2006, you're out of the military.
Yep.
And then how old were your kids at the time?
So my oldest was 5 or going on 6. And then I was pregnant with my youngest. So that was kind of the decision to get out of the Army because I was pregnant and, you know, I just, at the time I still was really struggling a lot with what had happened to me and I just wasn't sure and the war was still going on. And I was like, I don't think I can do this again, you know, like, especially with 2 kids. So, you know, when my contract expired, I just decided just to go ahead and make the jump to the civilian world.
What about your husband? Is he still in the Army?
Yeah. He's still in. So he actually took a break. So when I was serving for my time in the National Guard, he actually held down the fort at home and just really like managed everything. And then once I made the decision to get out in 2006, he was like, okay, I really miss it. I want to join. And so he's been in ever since, and he retires next year. So
wow. Finally. Awesome. So what would you say you learned from your whole time in the military, not just from your time in the Army, and then you did the National Guard, and then, you know, your experiences in Iraq? What would you say you learned? And what was the biggest lesson you learned from that?
I think the biggest lesson I've learned is that, you know, yes, I love my country, but I love the people I serve with more. Yeah. And I think that's really, you know, and even in my civilian life, you know, I just really, those people that are in my inner circle, like, you know, I will do anything I have to do to keep them safe, healthy, happy. And I think a lot of that came from the Army. You know, you learn to just like, that's what comes first is the people around you.
Yeah. You forge those friendships that mm-hmm. last for a long time. And I think, that mentality helps you even create new fresh mm-hmm. friendships and bonds from anything, from your, you know, where you work and other people you meet, you mm-hmm. know, parents of your kids' friends and things of that sort. So your kids are getting you're getting up there now. They're your youngest daughter's what? Still in high school, you said?
She'll be in high school next year. She's 14. So
okay. Yep. Yeah, I did get a chance to meet your kids and your husband for a short amount of time when you did your Alive Day run. And what sort of lessons do you teach your kids now that you say this is how we do things? Cause I've noticed that you're not a hands-off parent, but you're not going to push your kids into, you got to do what we do, or you got to, this is the path you need to go. You kind of say you create the roadmap.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we are we've always taken the approach of like not being extremely stern. And then actually my kids joke that like, they're like, you've never set a curfew for us, but yet we've never come home like at 4 o'clock in the morning either. And so like, that just has what's worked for us. You know, we've also instilled in our kids, we have two girls. And so, I've been very passionate about making sure like that they know their self-worth, that they, you know how to stand up for themselves to anybody, you know, and that, you know, we've really empowered them to, you know, to do what makes you happy and you know, love who you want to love, and just really making sure that they know like that, you know, we're here for them, and whatever they, you know, they want to do in life, we're going to support them.
Absolutely. What would you say is something that maybe most people may not know about you?
Something most people may not know about me. I actually, as a kid, so people that know me now wouldn't know this, but as a kid, I was actually overly, overly sensitive. Like, the kind of like the crybaby when I was in elementary school. So seriously. And I think a lot of people that have only known me as an adult would never probably think that.
Right.
You know, but I was like, I was always like the kid that's like, oh, I have allergies. Like as I was crying because like somebody hurt my feelings for something. So
there had to. Yeah. So there was definitely a turning point when you were younger to hit that switch of not doing that anymore. Cause I don't sense that on the surface of you being like that, overly sensitive. You're usually all right, let's do this kind of person.
Probably in high school, I would say I kind of turned that switch off. So,
and you keep yourself very busy. I know we mentioned you wake up really early, more earlier. I think you said this is a good time for, because your dogs are sleeping, probably because it's the middle of the day now for them. If you wake them up. So what do you do on your free time? I mean, I noticed you do yoga and you do some other things too, right?
Yep. So I'm currently going to school to be a yoga instructor. So that's taking up a lot of my free time. Just it's a 200-hour certification process. So lots and lots of yoga. And then I'm also writing a book. So that's also what I do in my free time.
You're writing a book? Yeah. Okay. So first, all right, let's get to the book in just a second, but the yoga, what made you decide that you wanted to be a yoga instructor? Because I know some people do yoga as a, you know, especially being out of the military, maybe it's a time for you to feel at ease and, but also, you know, feel flexible and all that stuff. But what made you say, all right, I'm going to take that step to being a yoga instructor?
Well, I think, I've been doing yoga for several years now, and sure. I love it. And I don't want to sound corny, but I kind of felt over the last probably 2 years, I felt compelled that, like, I don't know, like, I need to be certified, not necessarily to make money from it. I'm actually planning on probably hosting free sessions for people sure. because, I'm really passionate about connecting people who've had trauma in their life with yoga. And I'm not a therapist, so I'm not going to come at it from like a counseling yeah. standpoint or therapy standpoint, but just, you know, sharing how it's helped me cope with things. I mm-hmm. think, there's just a lot of people out there that I could help, that can't get the help they need because of money. So I want to be able yeah. to, you know, offer those services for free to people.
I think that's awesome. And so let's talk about this book. Many people love to read, but the writing of a book and telling, you know, their story. But is this a autobiography or is this a work of fiction? What's tell me about this book?
So it's a historical fiction. I actually came up with the story while I was in Iraq. So I've had this okay. story in my head for almost 17 years. And it's about a female soldier that is taken prisoner in Iraq. And it kind of started with my battle buddy and I, before he got injured, we would, you know, drive for hours on these missions. And so yeah. to keep ourselves awake, we would tell each other stories. We would just make up stories. And so I like just thought about, I was like, what if like I got captured? Like what would sure. happen? And like, I just started like telling this story of this female soldier and it's just evolved over the years. And I'm like almost 60,000 words into the story. And I'm like maybe a third of the way through it.
Wow. So this like is
Game of Thrones book.
Yeah. So this is going to be possibly something that you think could be like a series, or it's just going to be a really, really thick book.
Yeah. I don't know yet. Like that's where like, I really don't have a lot of experience with, I mean, I took writing classes and I love yeah. to read, but like, I don't, you know, I'm not like an expert. So I'm just like right now, I'm just getting it all out of my head. And then I yeah. figure I'll probably, you know, hire somebody to help me edit sure. and sort it out and see if it should be multiple books or if it should just be one huge 10,000 page book or something.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's, I'm excited. So you're at the, what would you say, a third of the way through the halfway point?
I'm about I'm probably closer to halfway. Right now I have it like into like three parts and I'm almost done with part two. So yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't. How long has it taken you to get to the point you are right now? So what do you think the timeline of book at least roughly done is?
I'm hoping my goal is to be done writing this year. Like, you know, it took me 17 years. Well, I started it last year and then I kind of like walked away from it because I don't know, during COVID, you would think I would have like had the time to write, but I just like couldn't bring myself to do it. And then over Christmas break, this past Christmas, I sat down for like 10 days and just like hammered out like just so much.
Yeah. I think I saw you doing that and saw some of the progress. And I think that's amazing to see. And I'm looking forward to that book. You might have to come back on and talk yeah. to me and we may just go and talk about that story because I think whether they be fiction or nonfiction, everybody has an amazing story. And even if they're stories you come up with while you're driving in a truck somewhere, I think is awesome as well. But will you say that your story is more interesting now after having this conversation with me?
I guess so. I guess I'm not that boring.
No, I don't think you're boring at all. And I think I appreciate you taking some time to talk to me, but I'm looking forward to that book. What's that book going to be called? Does it have a working title yet?
It does. It's called Always Forward.
Yeah. I love that. Well, I look forward to talking to you again sometime, Adele, but thank you so much for taking some time today to chat with me.
Yeah, absolutely, Johnny. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan. Special thanks to our guests for telling their stories. And if you have a story to tell, I'd love to hear more. Please reach out to me by emailing letstalk@wsjm.com. That's letstalk@wsjm.com. You can listen to this podcast and all the episodes wherever you like to listen to podcasts. And be sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts. This is a Midwest Family production. I'm Johnny Reinhart. Join me next time for another great story on Start From the Beginning, Stories from Southwest Michigan.